Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 28th day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana. Check the agricultural news for the afternoon and hear all about the weather forecast, too. That with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Oh, and I'll tell you how to purchase your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's coming up on the third day of March, the first Tuesday of that month at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll have 16 analysts on hand. You'll get a Beef House rolling coffee in the morning, the Beef House lunch at the noon hour, and the cost, get this, just $30. There's not a better bargain anyplace else. Join us for the All-Day Ag Outlook. Tickets are available online at willag.org. Right now.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. March corn today up 6 cents, filled that gap that was left on Monday. 386 and a half was the settlement price, again up 6 cents for the March. The May at 392, up 5 1/4, and July corn at 397 1/4, up 5. December 397 and a half, 2 1/4 higher. March soybeans down 2 1/4 at $8.95. The May at 909, down 2 cents, and July 2 1/4 lower at 922 1/4. Next year's November, 930 and a half, 3 cents lower. The bean oil, 6 cents lower at 31.46. The bean meal, 20 cents lower at 297.60. Wheat futures, soft red, July at 5.67 1/4, 3 1/2 lower. The July hard red, down 4 3/4 at 4.96 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures down just a dime for the day at 1.22.15. And the February, April, 60 cents lower at 1.20.70. Feeder cattle up 15 cents at 1.42 and a nickel for the day, and the January contract and lean hogs. February futures 27.5 cents higher at $66.22 and a half. Probably important to note that all three of those futures contracts were trading with expanded limits today for live cattle, feeder cattle, and lean hogs. Energies, the crude oil, $53.63 a barrel, up 48 cents. Ethanol futures about $1.31 2/10 of a cent, around 8 1/10 of a cent higher. And heating oil up 4 cents at $1.71 9/10. Gasoline 2 2 higher. That's $1.50 6/10 of a cent on its trade. Natural gas up around 4 cents for the day at $1.95. The Dow around 269 points higher. The dollar up 0.08. And the gold futures down 40 cents. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, to take a look at what happened in Chicago. All in all, not a bad day given what yesterday looked like, Wayne. Thanks for being with us, by the way.
Yeah, it's sure a lot better than it looked yesterday morning, thinking what could happen through this week. A little bit of turnaround for our Tuesday. You know, the beans didn't quite get higher on the day, but boy, they turned around from where they were earlier in the evening and from where they were from the lows of yesterday, and that was awfully good. I think that we've seen some over-active imaginations of what could happen with the coronavirus, and I think that we're maybe getting that a little better in perspective and thinking of that it's going to get under control, because China is really doing a pretty good job of trying to, I think, control the spread of it right now.
You know, on Sunday night into Monday for the corn trade, there was a gap left. It wasn't big, but there was a gap left. It's nice that it came back and filled that today.
Yeah, it sure is. And I mean, it's nice to see us getting back closer to the upper end of that trading range rather than being right at the bottom end of the range, looking that we can maybe break out. You know, we'd love to see that March corn get back above that 92.5 again, or back above 93, and see if we can maybe get a shot at that 402 number.
You think that's in the offing again now? We were thinking that last week as we closed out the week. We have a little hiccup there, but maybe back in the offing, I guess, huh?
Well, I think, you know, a lot's going to depend on what we see happen as far as our export business and some of the things that are going on. I think, you know, one of the things we want to see, and it's going to be a while here because it's going to take, they extended the holiday in China, but some Chinese business would sure help us to do some of this. And, you know, being we are competitive in the world market and the corn market now, a few more sales, like we saw this morning from Mexico around to some other countries, sure wouldn't hurt anything as to give a little incentive here to maybe get this corn market back close to $4.
I suppose Thursday morning probably will be our first indication whether the Chinese were in to buy on dips. Oftentimes it says to undisclosed destinations or something along those lines.
Yeah, we'd sure like to see a few of those undisclosed. Even if it is in Chinese, we can get the feeling on the board that it is.
Yeah, that would work out. Hey, so who were the buyers today in the corn market?
Well, you know, the funds were stepped in and bought about 8,000 contracts of corn today. I think you had a few people that looked and said that, hey, we're down in the area where this may be some end users, I think, maybe popped in and bought some stuff here today, too, because we got down towards the bottom end of what the trading range had been. And, you know, with all of the brightness of the phase one with everything else going on right now, I think that we were getting a little more positive feeling that maybe the bottom wasn't going to fall out of things. So I think a lot of people, maybe some that got out yesterday, even turned around and bought something back today.
What's local demand feel like to you?
Farmers are very quiet here right now, but the basis levels are extremely good for this time of year. Generally, we're seeing a very poor basis at the end of January going into February. That's generally when we're still seeing farmers trying to move some grain, and it's generally not at a plus basis like we're having this year. So actually pretty good, and a few farmers are still hauling some grain, but very good demand at the terminals.
Two other things. I want to get to soybeans in a second, talk about the size of the crop in Brazil and what impact that will have. However, we probably should also look towards the end of March and the acreage figures from here in the United States. Does that give you concern?
It does, Todd. I mean, we had a lot of prevent plant acres last year. We're going to have bigger acreages this year. You know, the one thing that we're looking at that might help a little bit is when they resurvey some of the farmers for all of the grain that's left in the field that they maybe didn't discount very heavily. So it might take some off the old crop, but we're going to see some big numbers as far as planting goes, planting intentions go. And that's going to be something that is going to weigh heavily on this market unless we see some Chinese business coming in.
You know, soybeans, I take it, will probably remain under some pressure simply because there's a crop coming out of Brazil now, and it looks like a good one.
It looks like a very good crop out of Brazil. It's going to be huge numbers. We're going to continue to see them shipping beans to China. They bought quite a few ahead here like that. Argentina, the weather forecast seems to change every day. One day it looks a little good, the next day it looks a little dry. But I think that we're going to maybe see a little bit shrinkage of the Argentine crop, but the Brazil crop's going to continue to stay big. What we're hoping for is a lot more rain in Brazil right now that can delay harvest enough that they might not get the safrinha crop planted as early or as many acres that might help us for later on the corn acres there.
The livestock sector was under immense pressure yesterday. I don't remember the last time or if I've ever seen all three, the live cattle, feeder cattle, and lean hogs in expanded limits. They performed well today, given that.
Yeah, they bounced back also. I think that they looked a lot at what was going on with the sickness in China and what they thought might really slow down the shipment of pork and beef there. We also saw a big contract signed by JBS into China for the next few years that also helped bit that up either. But, you know, we are still seeing some pretty good movement. The cutout, actually, the market was down yesterday. The cutout in pork actually went up, Todd. Sort of funny, but that did work opposite. So that was there to help us get a little better start this morning.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, ethanol and corn groups are hailing a federal court ruling striking down three EPA ethanol exemptions granted to small oil refiners. The Renewable Fuels Association and the National Corn Growers Association, the American Coalition for Ethanol, and the National Farmers Union as well say the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruling is a big win for ethanol, and the groups claim that the court's ruling in their 2018 lawsuit against three EPA exemptions to refiners owned by CVR Energy and Holly Frontier could apply more broadly in the future. Here's Renewable Fuels President Jeff Cooper.
This opinion, it is very well reasoned. It's very thorough, has much broader applicability than just the three refineries that we challenged.
The court ruled that EPA cannot extend exemptions to any small refineries whose temporary exemptions lapsed, leading the plaintiffs to claim just 7 of 35 SREs granted last year were legal.
This opinion, it is very well reasoned. It's very thorough, has much broader applicability than just the 3 refineries that we challenged.
Cooper, again, who's with the Renewable Fuels Association, says EPA has granted an average of 28 waivers a year. And he claims that these have reduced RFS volume requirements by more than 4 billion gallons over the past 3 years, idling some 15 to 20 plants, and cutting corn prices by 20 to 25 cents. Well, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture is in Europe this week, including visits to Rome and the Netherlands. Yesterday, Sonny Perdue met with farm ministers in Brussels to discuss the prospects for a partial trade agreement, which President Donald Trump and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen have both said could come quickly. After sitting down with EU Trade Commissioner Phil Hogan, Perdue told reporters there won't be any deal unless Europe agrees to painful concessions on food standards, most notably allowing acid-rinsed chicken. Hogan has said the EU could compromise on less controversial food and ag issues like restrictions on apples, pears, and mollusk. But Perdue said those smaller measures won't cut it. We're not going to get there with apples and pears and shellfish, he says. Perdue also argued that U.S. poultry farmers have shifted to a chemical that's mostly like vinegar instead of chlorine. To say that's unsafe or not to be used, we just don't think there's a basis for that in sound science, said the Secretary of Agriculture. And well, let's stay in Europe for a moment, where Germany's agriculture minister yesterday warned other EU farm officials that the country is facing a massive cull of pigs if ASF crosses the border from Poland into Germany. The disease isn't a threat to humans, but it's wreaking havoc on pork production in Eastern Europe and Asia. It's already wiped out millions of pigs in China and driven up demand for imported proteins. European hog prices last week were more than 36% higher than last year. And finally today, well, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District is monitoring high water conditions affecting parts of the Upper Mississippi River in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. This is a result of the historic flows this winter. Cities from Winona, Minnesota to Gutenberg, Iowa have increased chance of localized flooding due to ice dams. The current river flows are at levels normally observed in late spring. Irregular temperatures have also prevented ice from forming in a stable way, which compounds the ice dam problem. The ice has blocked the river's normal flow and forced water out of its banks. It's also reduced the ability to actively manage the river water elevations. Depending on temperatures and the rate of ice melt, there could be more high water in the weeks and months ahead. The Corps is working with the National Weather Service and the U.S. Geological Survey to monitor the river and provide communications with the public. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Don Day, Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, is here now to check in on the weather forecast. Hey, Don, thanks so much for being here. A little gray, kind of gloomy here today. How about in your part of the world?
Not bad. It's been a busy weather pattern in the sense that there continues to be quite a bit of Pacific moisture and energy moving into the northwest and north central United States, causing mountain snow activity, but not much on the plains is really the weather, at least here in the short term. Fairly quiet with no major system moving across the middle part of the country. Now, that's going to change next week. As we get into February, I think we're going to see a shift in the weather pattern that, at least in the long term, Todd, is going to mean colder, more wintry weather for a large part of the country starting next week. But up until then, and this is including the weekend, there's really not a lot going on.
Oftentimes, there is a division when we talk about a large part of the country between either the northwest and the southeast or the north and the south. Are the dividing lines as to where it'll be cold and a little bit warmer?
Well, I think what we're going to see is a more widespread cold that's going to be centered a little bit more to the west. But that being said, I think there's a large part from the Pacific Northwest to the Rockies, through the northern plain states into the northern Great Lakes, and perhaps the northwest and western edge of the Corn Belt. Those are the areas that we see a transition to colder weather next week and the week after that. I think the first half of February is going to see a pattern that's going to be colder. maybe as cold as it's been for some areas of the north central United States that we've seen this winter.
Anything for my part of the world that we need to be concerned about it, or is it just in that 30s and gray?
Well, what ends up happening is the coldest air, when it's to your northwest and you're in that transition zone between the coldest air and the warmer, more moist air to the south, you tend to be in a trouble area, meaning you're going to put yourself in a position where a lot of the Corn Belt is going to have rain and snow chances in this pattern change. And I think that's going to go right through the heart of the Corn Belt, Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. The next 10 to 15 days, precipitation chances are looking good, and some of that is going to be frozen. So you'll want to take advantage of this relatively quiet weather here for the next 5 to 7 days.
Any flood risk coming along with it, because we have saturated soils and generally high river levels?
I would say that will come later. I would say at least with what we see coming, I don't see that, because I think it'll be cold enough that it'll be a lot of it's going to be in the frozen variety.
Some quick thoughts from you on the South American crops.
Well, as we take a look at their weather down there and in terms of what we're seeing over the next couple of weeks, looks like many areas of Brazil, many areas of Argentina are going to do pretty good. In fact, we see above average precipitation over the next week for most of the key growing areas of Argentina, especially the central and the north. Brazil as well is looking at good amounts of precipitation. Temperatures are going to be a little bit cooler than average as well. So that's one part of the southern hemisphere, South America, that hasn't had extreme dryness like other parts of the southern hemisphere has had.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the Farming World. Hey, have you signed up, got your tickets yet for the March 3rd All-Day Ag Outlook? Probably not. They just went on sale. You can find the links on our website at willag.org right now. We'll have 16 analysts at the Beef House on the third day of March. That's the first Tuesday of the month. And the cost is just $30. You won't find that for $70 or $100 or $500 any other place. If you've not been to the All-Day Ag Outlook, this is the year you should come. Remember, the All-Day Ag Outlook will put you in touch with all the analysts that you hear on our ag programming on a regular basis during the opening and the closing market report, many other places as well. Eric Snodgrass will be there with a complete look at the weather forecast. Gary Schnicke will talk about ARC PLC, SCO, and the crop insurance decision, and we'll have a look into the future with Steve Malberger. It should be a great day, and the $30 not only gives you those 16 analysts, but also that great Beef House roll and coffee in the morning and a Beef House lunch. What more could you ask for? Tuesday, March 3rd, buy your tickets online right now at willag.org. Dan O'Brien now joins us. He is with K-State University, an ag economist there. He's been traveling across the state. In fact, he's out and about, I think, presenting some marketing outlook with the Farm Bureau in the state today. Where are you?
I'm in Minneapolis, Kansas, not Minneapolis, Minnesota. And, yeah, we've been having it's a Winning the Game grain marketing workshop, which it did originate out of Minnesota, talking about corn and a lot of folks wondering about how to constructively and in a disciplined manner figure out how to market their grain, market their corn in particular, for here in 2020.
So what are you telling them? Let's start there.
Well, our cost of production in Kansas with decent yields is around 360, 370. That's full economic cost. That's not extra for living, but. So even though prices aren't as high as people have been expecting, you start with a base of say 360, 370. We're in the ballpark of being able to have some forward contracts that will come near that, and then we'd be counting on seasonality and some improvement in demand, exports hopefully, and also through the ethanol side of things to give us some scale-up pricing opportunities. Really, it's just a matter of how high do you think grain prices with uncertainty and the other challenges might go this summer. If it's $5 or $5.50, well, we can build some strategies that that will help people kind of, at least in a disciplined manner, work towards that if it's available, or go ahead and do some disciplined pricing if it's not.
Yeah. So what do you think is an upside potential that they should actually work for? The $5 or $550 sounded awful high given the number of acres, at least our analysts have been talking about on the air so far.
Well, that's right. You know, the outlook is for $4 or $5 million, at least that I have understood, $4 or $5 million more acres planted of corn. Also in the same outlooks, they talk about wet weather and out of what I've heard it from climatologists is that it's not out of the realm of being reasonable and rational to think that we could have planting problems again this spring. So we learned last year, rain doesn't always make grain if you can't get the crop in very well. So we still have some uncertainty to deal with. And right now, what's right in front of us, of course, the coronavirus and other issues at hand. It's hard to see optimism at this point in time, still, though, we do have seasonal influences to work through, and we've had a pretty good history over time in almost every year working through the spring planting, early summer time frame before we see prices really fall off, and with good prospects into fall. Well, that's probably what people are counting on for at least the possibility of some pricing opportunities heading off into the spring of this year.
You know, up to this point, and I think it will change potentially, those sometimes marketing plans have said, you know, when we get to the seasonalities in the spring and the summer, don't forget you have a floor under the market with your crop insurance plan.
Right.
And they will, I suppose, continue to do that, but they might be using SCO and have a lower crop insurance coverage, although you're far enough to the west that may not be the case.
Really, we talk a lot about SCO in Kansas. I've had only marginal sales. It provides an opportunity for some folks, but we haven't had a lot of reliance on it, at least yet. But we do certainly rely on the revenue products, you know, revenue protection for sure. And here, you know, we're just about ready to enter into February. Dease corn hovering around $4, Dease 2020. And if we have that type of a, if we end up around $4 for a planning price, you know, that'll be important. It's that $4 planting price is better than $3.50 or $3. So, I don't doubt that in talking with farmers, in this environment, we're uncertain of where any of our crop prices are going. They'll tend to fall back on what they're most comfortable with that they can get decent yields on. A lot of times that's corn for a good part of Kansas. We do see some soybeans, grain sorghum, and of course winter wheat planted, but we've been shifting towards corn for our feedlot ethanol industries out here in this part of the state, and be hard to really, with all the infrastructure and expertise that's been built up in that, be hard to see that switch in a different direction anytime quickly.
On that note, we probably should talk a little bit about ethanol. Did you get a chance to look at stocks or usage, demand, those sorts of things?
I think where things are really going, it's kind of driven by where the price is. If you look at the price of ethanol during the month of December, started out the first week at about $1.45 a gallon, and then fell off to $1.27, $1.28 for the rest of the month. Started out in January $1.28, and has moved down lower again to $1.23, $1.24. So that's on the negative side. We have seen at least decent action, or at least some support for DDG prices. Last week in December, about 151 for an average in Iowa anyway, 150 the first week in January. Then had some volatility, fell down lower the 10th of January. That for the weekend 17th, 143 back up to 147. I would note that with the signing of the U.S.-China Phase 1 deal, that one of the potential gainers in that if their livestock industry isn't damaged by all the things that are hitting them would be Chinese imports of DDGs. So at least that's thought to be perhaps one of the gainers. Of course, in Kansas, they're also hoping that that grain sorghum might find an opening there too. But just interesting to look at that. And of course, corn prices, you know, in Iowa, they're basically 380 to 390, something like that, and haven't been jumping higher. So you look at that equation with pretty much unchanged corn prices and distillers grains being just so for selling prices and a lower ethanol price. It's a challenge. That would just be a challenging situation for the profitability of the ethanol plant.
One other thing before I let you go, because we're talking a little bit about consumption here and production both. Your market there should feed the lots, the cattle lots. What do you see for the coming year for the number of beef animals?
Well, I think that in Kansas, we've had enthusiasm for livestock enterprises, and I think that was born from the increased export prospects. I just seen a report came out here recently about strong livestock production the last month in the U.S. and Kansas would certainly share in that. I was just speaking with someone at our meeting on the. That's involved in the feeder cattle side of the market, and they were talking about the volatility that's happened in the last few days, and really wondering how their segment will fit into this in terms of profitability. So overall, we've had large production, feed usage numbers kind of reflected that out of the USDA January report. But maybe the most judicious thing to say is that doesn't mean that there's not stress and uncertainty for each of the different subsegments of that beef industry in Kansas.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much.
Thanks. Take care, Todd.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You have a good day. I'm Todd Gleason.